Greetings. This is podcast number 29 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today, I'm going to spend most of the podcast discussing the memorial service for Coretta Scott King. The right-wing carping, sniping, and bellyaching about that service glaringly reveals the lack of moral dimension to their being, as well as a level of chutzpah that puts the proverbial parent killer begging for mercy as an orphan to shame. Also, I'm going to announce a contest. Oh, let's get right into it. A regular listener, Steve H., an attorney back east where I was born and raised, wrote in and said, quote, "Are you getting a little sick and tired, like I am, about right-wingers telling us what we can and cannot say at our own leaders' funerals? I hope and pray that when I die, that people will give me some recognition for having a social conscience, and that they will use the occasion to, well, blast the right." Close quote. Amen to that. Coretta Scott King, the wife of Dr. Martin Luther King, was recently buried in a ceremony attended by thousands. Four U.S. presidents, including George W. Bush, were there. The right wing has fabricated another of their phony controversies, this time about what some of the funeral orators said. I'm going to focus here on the words of one of them, Reverend Joseph Lowry, and on his encounter with Sean Hannity the next day. I've got the audio clips for you. Because of Hannity's constant interrupting and trying to change the subject whenever anyone tries to make a point opposing him, I've had to rearrange the order of some of the comments to lend coherency to the proceedings. Rest assured, no meanings have been altered. Joseph Lowry is the president emeritus of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He's an icon of the civil rights movement, having worked and marched alongside Martin Luther King Jr. Lowry was one of the leaders on the Selma to Montgomery March. Lowry is now 84 years old. At the funeral, Lowry said that Coretta Scott King, quote, "deplored the terror inflicted by our smart bombs on missions way afar." Then he went on,
"We know now there were no weapons of mass destruction over there.
Here he's getting a prolonged standing ovation from the audience. Remember, George and Laura Bush are directly behind Lowry on the dais.
But Coretta knew, and we know, that there are weapons of misdirection right down here."
He continued, quote, "Millions without health insurance. Poverty abounds. For war, billions more, but no more for the poor." Close quote. It seems perfectly appropriate to me to speak these words at the funeral of a woman who dedicated her entire life to, and whose husband was assassinated because of his pursuit of, human rights and peace. So what happened on Hannity and Combs? Here's Hannity framing the issue.
Welcome back to Hannity and Combs. The impact continues to be felt tonight from political statements made Tuesday at the funeral of Coretta Scott King, with President Bush and thousands of mourners in attendance to honor the wife of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King. Several speakers used what should have been eulogies as opportunities to attack the president and the administration.
Hannity immediately sets forth his two main points that he'll repeat several times during the Lowry guest appearance. One, the statements were political. Two, the speakers attacked the president. Hannity started off his own attack on Lowry as follows.
Look, Reverend Lowry, let's be honest here. The President of the United States goes to Coretta Scott King's funeral, and you knew what you were saying. I've known you a long time. You knew what you were saying, and you knew you were taking a shot at the president. You're going to be honest here and acknowledge that, correct? Correct?
Lowry responded,
I'm always honest, and my speech was the same whether the president were in Atlanta or Athens, Greece. It had nothing to do with the president. I was doing my job. I was carrying out my assignment.
Now, Reverend.
I was asked, listen.
All right, go ahead.
I was asked by the family to give a civil rights and human rights tribute.
Well,
what did you expect me to talk about, wine and roses?
At least this time, Lowry did not let Hannity interrupt him, and Lowry was able to get out one of his main themes. The family had asked him to speak about the subjects he spoke about. But no matter what Lowry says, Hannity, as the master propagandist he is, just keeps repeating his main points. You were making political statements, engaging in politics, and you were attacking the president.
You know what, Reverend? There's a time and a place for politics. You've been on my radio show, and we've had a good give and take.
What you call politics show?
Wait a minute. We've had a good give and take. You knew very well when you used that line about weapons of mass destruction, you knew what the audience reaction would be, and you knew you were taking a shot at the president. Come on.
You also just heard Hannity make his less often repeated third point, that this wasn't the appropriate venue for these kinds of statements. Knowing that propaganda has to be repeated again and again to be effective, Hannity repeated the inappropriate venue charge 3 times, the attacking the president charge 4 times, and the political statement charge 5 times during the Lowry appearance. Now, what about Combs? As you know, I'm not a big fan of Alan Combs, but in this instance, he did pretty well. Here's some of what he said throughout the segment, making some points I would have made had I been there.
This is an invented controversy, Reverend, by Republicans who were so sensitive about President Bush at a time when he's not doing very well.
Yes, a made-up issue, just like the brouhaha the right raised over political statements made at Paul Wellstone's funeral. Just like the phony issue of the war against Christmas. Just like every fake controversy the right scares up to distract people from real issues, like Iraq. Like stagnating wages. Like lack of health insurance and thus lack of adequate health care for 45 million Americans. Back to Combs.
You say, I don't know how you do a eulogy for Coretta Scott King without bringing up the very issues that she stood for, that she talked about.
Exactly. Like Lowry said, the right wants him to talk about wine and roses. Another good Combs point.
These issues of poverty, of war, they didn't start with the Bush administration. What you said, what Jimmy Carter said, could have been said decades ago, because the same fight continues. They're making it about Bush when it wasn't.
These issues of poverty, of war, are issues that the right never wants to talk about, because the right knows that the public isn't on their side on these issues. Unlike the phony issues the right creates, like the attack on Christmas, where many Americans will fall for the charade. You must understand, Coretta Scott King wasn't the shrinking violet housewife tending to the children while Martin Luther King went out and risked his life and then lost it fighting for civil rights and an end to the Vietnam War. No, when Coretta and Martin met, she was probably more radical, and I use that term in the good sense, as more understanding, more unafraid to take facts to their logical conclusion. She was more radical, more progressive than he was. Coretta was the one always prodding Martin to link the civil rights struggle of the African-American community to the broader struggle for human rights around the world. And as part of that broader struggle, to speak out publicly against the Vietnam War, which Martin Luther King finally did in his famous Riverside Church speech in 1967. I really need to do a podcast segment on that speech, because so much of what King said is eerily prophetic in describing our present phony war on terror and colonial occupation of Iraq. This speech was the reason King was assassinated, exactly 1 year to the day after he made the speech. But I digress. Coretta Scott King was intimately involved in the struggle back then, and she was intimately involved up until the present day. She constantly spoke truth to power. Listen to Lowry address this point.
Coretta took shots at the president.
Yeah.
I met with Coretta with Ronald Reagan when he was president. And Ronald Reagan said, "We think things are going pretty well." Coretta looked him straight in the eye and said, "Mr. President, all is not well in our community." I had conversations with Coretta about the war in Iraq, about the weapons of mass destruction, about poverty. I was asked to talk on behalf of the civil rights human rights
community. You have every right to say whatever you want.
If you don't expect me to be true to my assignment, I'm sorry.
You tell him, Reverend Lowry. What could be more appropriate at Coretta Scott King's funeral than for those honoring her to take shots at the president, to speak truth to power in her name, in her memory, in her honor? And how much the better when the power that truth is being spoken to, the person against whom those shots are directed, is seated right up there on the dais, right behind the speaker of truth to power. Nothing could be more appropriate at her funeral. Coretta Scott King was most certainly looking down and smiling upon her funeral service. On that point, if you want to really get angry, listen to what Rush Limbaugh said. Quote, "I will tell you that I think Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King, if there was to be any anger from above looking down at that, it would be from them." Close quote. How dare this right-wing fanatic who stands against everything Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King believed in and dedicated their lives to, how dare this Limbaugh creature presume to understand how Coretta Scott King or Martin Luther King think? In fact, the kind of issues Lowry talked about were exactly what the King family said they wanted discussed, what Martin Luther King himself discussed at funerals he attended, and what Martin Luther King said he wanted for his own funeral. As to what the King family wanted, Lowry expanded upon his initial remark that he was following the family's wishes.
What did you expect me to talk about, Sean? I was there to talk about civil rights and human rights in the context of the life of Coretta Scott King.
But don't use a funeral.
It's written on the program.
Don't use a funeral for a political agenda, though.
But the funeral planners asked me to talk from the civil rights, human rights perspective.
Hey,
there was no way to talk about civil rights and human rights without talking about the war and poverty and racism and discrimination. It's written on the program. Civil rights and human rights tribute, Reverend Dr. Joseph Lowry, co-founder and president emeritus of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, co-founder with the husband of the woman we honored, of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I was the lineal successor to Martin. Martin served from 57 to 68. Ralph served from 68 to 77. Right. I served from 77 to 98.
So how do you not talk about those things? How do you give a eulogy and not mention the things you're now accused of politicizing? How do you not?
I wouldn't know what to say.
You hear the exasperation in Lowry's voice, in Combs's voice? It's what happens when you try to answer rationally an Alice in Wonderland type assertion from a right winger. As to what types of orations King himself gave at funerals he attended,
I want to put up on the screen, Reverend, some of the words used by Martin Luther King himself at a eulogy for young victims of the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama, on September 16, 1963. And he talked about those four little girls. And here's what he said. He said, they have something to say to a federal government that's compromised with the undemocratic practices of Southern Dixiecrats and the blatant hypocrisy of right-wing Northern Republicans. And I don't hear people criticizing Martin Luther King.
And as far as what King said he wanted at his own funeral,
I'd just like to put up on the screen, since we're honoring Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King, what he said in his famous drum major speech about what he would want said during his own funeral, his own eulogy. And he said, I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the war question. I want to be able to say that day that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want you to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. I want you to say I was a drum major for justice, a drum major for peace, a drum major for righteousness.
Isn't that powerful? Listening to it makes me want to cry. And that's without even hearing King's own voice, his booming preacher's cadences. I want you to be able to say that I was right on the war, that I clothed the naked, that I was a drum major for justice, peace, and righteousness. In other words, that I was the opposite of a right winger. Is it any wonder that the right wing abhors the kind of eulogy that the King family wanted, and that Martin Luther King himself preached, and that Martin Luther King wanted at his own funeral, and that Coretta Scott King received? Let me play one last full excerpt from Lowry. He went back to something Hannity said earlier and powerfully rebutted the oft-used right-wing mantra to those who seek justice and peace, it's not the appropriate time.
Let me tell you what else was said decades ago. It's not the appropriate time. When we started the bus boycott in Montgomery, it was not the appropriate time. When we went to Birmingham to fight segregation and public accommodations and brutal oppression on the part of the police department, the preachers said to Martin, it's not the appropriate time. And Martin wrote this letter from the Birmingham jail, which I brought as a gift to you, Sean.
Yes, sir.
It'll enrich your life. In this letter from the Birmingham jail, he said to those eight preachers, rabbi, priest, Protestant, Roman Catholic, he said to them, gentlemen, they've always told us it was not the appropriate time. But I say to you, it's always ripe time to do what's right. And I had to do what's right the other night. It's what I was asked to do and what God, I believe, wanted me to do in my conscience, in my heart, and I cannot recant.
And you darn well shouldn't recant, Reverend Lowry. At this juncture, I'd like to go beyond the points Combs raised. Like I said, he did a pretty good job, but nowhere near a blast the right job. So I'll pick up where he left off, amplifying some things I alluded to earlier. One is how this Hannity and Combs segment illustrates the propagandistic manner in which the right communicates. You heard how Lowry and Combs factually rebutted Hannity's assertions. So why does Hannity continually come back and repeat and repeat and repeat his unwarranted assertions? Just listen to this.
political statements, taking a shot at the president. Time and a place for politics, taking a shot at the president. Political agenda. Political agendas to take a shot politically at the president. In that environment, appropriateness of the venue. Shot at the president.
The answer is that, like all propagandists, Hannity doesn't care what his opponent says. He just ignores it. Hannity knows that if he keeps repeating his own lies often enough, a good percentage of people will believe them. There's also the issue of what's political. At one point, Reverend Lowry tried to address the phony issue of his comments being political, but Hannity, as he usually does when he can get away with it, won't let his guest get in a word edgewise.
You know what, Reverend? There's a time and a place for politics. You've been on my radio show, and we've had a good give and take.
What
over
you call politics show?
Wait a minute. We've had a good give and take. You knew very well
when the right says a progressive is politicizing something inappropriately, you can bet your bottom dollar that the progressive is raising an issue that the right winger can't defend against. Hence the attempted smear. The right winger uses the word politics as a pejorative, trying to imply there's something unseemingly partisan or even dirty politics-like inherent in the progressive statement. That's not the case. The partisan-ness, the dirty politics-ness, is only in the right winger's own mind. To a progressive, issues of social justice, economic justice, racial justice, war and peace are moral issues, beyond partisanship, beyond dirty politics, or any politics at all. They're core issues of what it means to be human, to be moral, to be, as Martin Luther King put it, righteous. But to a right winger, all these areas of concern, social justice, economic justice, racial justice, war and peace, to a right winger, these are political issues, because the moral dimension of these issues has no meaning to the right winger. The right winger always sees these issues as merely political issues, annoyances, unnecessarily raised, brought up for debate by a political other, the left, as challenges that must be defeated in the political arena. The right winger doesn't see these issues as overriding moral problems that must be solved. The lives of Coretta Scott King and her husband Martin Luther King were, at their essence, about being anti-right wing. Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King devoted their lives to racial justice, social justice, economic justice, and peace. The right wing is fanatically committed to the exact opposite. Right wing goals are racial injustice, social injustice, economic injustice, war. Of course the right wing doesn't want anyone at the funeral to speak about the real lives of Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King. Their lives were one long anti-right wing agitation. Shut up, funeral orators. Don't say anything. Finally, there's the issue of chutzpah. The right's chutzpah, their presumptuousness, their arrogance, their shamelessness is incredible. Right-wingers opposed every civil rights measure they ever encountered. And they're telling the civil rights community what to say at the funeral of a civil rights icon? The right even opposed establishing a national holiday honoring the husband of the very woman who was being buried. And they think they have the right to say anything at all about what goes on at the funeral? And what about the present? current day GOP racism is well documented. From George W. Bush's decimation of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, the division charged with enforcing the civil rights laws that Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King fought for, to the GOP-enacted Georgia poll tax and Tom DeLay's Texas redistricting, both of which career Justice Department lawyers said violated the Civil Rights Act, but which Bush political operatives allowed to go through anyway. You know what? Given their past and present opposition to the interests of the African-American community, right-wingers should be grateful they're even allowed to attend the funeral of a Coretta Scott King. That they were even allowed to attend Coretta Scott King's funeral. I mean, Sean Hannity has said that his political hero is Ronald Reagan. Reagan was one of the leading right-wingers who opposed the Civil Rights Acts that Martin Luther King and Coretta Scott King devoted their lives to achieving. Ronald Reagan helped prop up the racist South African apartheid regime. Ronald Reagan chose to give a major presidential campaign speech praising states' rights, a code phrase for anti-civil rights, in the very southern county where the three civil rights workers, James Cheney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner, were brutally murdered. Reagan opposed establishing a federal holiday in honor of Martin Luther King. With heroes like that, Sean, you shouldn't be allowed within 100 yards of a good, righteous man like Joseph Lowry. Instead, we're forced to witness the spectacle of Joseph Lowry, 84 years old, one of the last living lions of the civil rights movement, being sniped at by Sean Hannity, half his age. A 40-something pipsqueak, a snot-nosed know-nothing who never risked his life for anyone and who advocates nothing except that which will further enrich himself and his fellow multimillionaires. The predominant emotion that wells up in me is disgust. Of course, isn't disgust an emotion you and I often feel when contemplating the words and actions of the right wing?
The kind of catapult of propaganda. In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again. The kind of catapult of propaganda. Catapult of propaganda.
I want to announce a contest. Who can make the most convincing case in connection with the following? What one action of George W. Bush will ultimately bring about the most human suffering and death? What one action of George Bush will ultimately bring about the most human suffering and death? If you want, you can write in. What I would prefer, however, is that you call in and leave a comment so I could play it on the podcast. If you write something out first and then you call in, try and animate your voice when you read it. It makes it much more interesting to listen to that way. Well, that'll about wrap it up for today. If you want to know more about Ronald Reagan and GOP racism, go to podcast number 11, Sean Hannity's Big Lie About Civil Rights. On the current GOP racism I spoke about, you can check out podcast number 21. You might be interested to know that there's an entire second half of the Lowry appearance with Sean Hannity and Alan Combs. In it, Hannity keeps telling Lowry how great Republicans are for the African-American community. Maybe we'll get into that part in a future podcast. As always, if you enjoyed what you heard today, tell a friend about Blast the Right. If they don't know about podcasting, tell them about that as well. Music credits. We opened with L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. They're at music.podshow.com. The bumper music was Catapult the Propaganda by Nise Music, N-I-S-E, music.com. We'll end with a little bit of Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth. Links to that tune, as well as all the other music played on Blast the Right, can be found on my music resources page, linked to off the main podcast homepage. Also, links to all the statistics, quotations, etc. that I use on the podcast can be found on my data resources page, which is also linked to off the main podcast homepage. I love to get your comments, so write to me, rational@adelphia.net. And call in and leave a comment for me to play on the podcast, including for the contest that I spoke about. If you're on Skype, my Skype name is Jack from Blast the Right. If you're not on Skype, just dial up 310-933-5891 and leave a message. 310-933-5891. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
We had a bundle in the treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get. Then you gave tax breaks to the millionaires, and you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you.